Check, 1, 2. Testing, 1, 2. This is Mr. Nobody. Episode 18. Today I'm going to read a story my son wrote. The briefcase. Stacy works on the 7th floor of an office building in New York City, above a big department store on Broadway and East 9th, right off Astor Place subway stop. She works for Coopers, Coffins, and Caskets. They share the 7th floor with the office of a successful social media website that also takes up the 8th floor. Stacy might find that interesting if her account on the website was more popular, but it's not. She thinks the only opinions worth caring about are the ones that can't be ignored, mainly her own. Coopers, Coffins, and Caskets is a company that buys coffins that have been missized or damaged to be repurposed for collectors and artists looking for a conversation piece. She has spent the better part of 5 years sitting at the reception desk in an office chair that leans back just a little too far. She answers the phone and makes calls to funeral homes, carpenters, and customers. Once, a young couple bought a coffin as a crib for their newborn.
Stacy really liked it.
Stacy greets the handful of people who work at Coopers, but mostly she spends her time ignoring the 50 enthusiastic men and women who work with the website. Stacy sits behind a casket that has been extended to reach the ground. It has a cavity cut away from one side to make for a private work area. The repurposed coffin is made of maple wood with Nordic carvings and bits of velvet from where it was once lined to make a comfortable home for a dead person. Every day, Stacy gets off the elevator, which opens to a small blood-colored room, and faces two hazy glass doors that only her silhouette shows through.
Sometimes,
she stands there and pretends someone is watching her through the glass, like she's part of some avant-garde theater piece.
There isn't, though,
and she doesn't believe in God either. She likes those doors because they hide people's faces for a moment before she has to engage them. She walks through to face the casket that is her desk, and thinks of how nice it would be if she were buried in it. Most days, Stacy is sent on runs to the local coffee shop down the street by her boss, Andrew Wright. In her opinion, everything there tastes like drinking from a toilet bowl
in a bus stop bathroom.
One summer, 8 years ago, Stacy ate a whole box of cough medicine on a bus back from Long Beach Island.
She was lost
when she woke up at the Port Authority bus station and asked a stranger for directions. Neither she nor the stranger could understand the other. She woke a few hours later on the floor in the bathroom about 30 feet from where she got off the bus. She didn't drink the toilet water, but she could smell the bathroom the rest of the way home.
That smell.
It was there all the way on the shuttle from Times Square to the Metro North train ride upstate out of the city and the walk up the hill from the train station to her parents' house in Westchester. She will never forget that smell.
And now,
this coffee she holds for 7 floors in a closed elevator is on the same list.
Thanks for calling Coopers, Coffins, and Caskets. How may I help you?
She answers some pricing questions and hangs up the phone.
Stacy, can I see you for a moment?
Her boss walks past her. She trips a little, getting out of her chair to follow him to his office.
She's wearing shiny black shoes.
And they aren't broken in yet.
Her boss.
Andrew Wright has jet black hair and wears the same faded pinstripe suit every day.
He could almost look like Beetlejuice with some makeup.
Take a seat, he says, and closes the door behind them. Stacy sits in the office chair facing her boss. She looks at a small twisted tree on the windowsill and wonders what it says about his character. A fountain on the desk makes it almost seem like there is a stream nearby.
And not just sewers.
What's going on, Andy? She asks. This chair is pretty comfortable, by the way.
Stacy, you've worked here for 5 years.
She nods. Her dark hair bounces a little bit just above her shoulders.
Do you ever wonder how we make enough money to stay in business?
I mean,
do you know how expensive it is to have a space in a building like this? We work next to a business that is worth billions, while we sell coffins.
He said. Not really, Stacy shifts around in the chair a bit. They sit in silence for a few seconds. The gurgle of the fountain starting to sound distant
and artificial
rather than handy.
Listen, I've known you for years, and I trust you, Stacy.
He speaks slowly.
Stacy notices lines in his face that she's never seen before.
She hasn't often looked at him face to face like this, since he usually keeps to himself.
Stacy, I have a favor to ask.
He sits in a big leather chair with a funny smile on his face. He reaches down next to him and picks up a woman's designer briefcase. Stacy thinks it must have been expensive, like the one she sees women getting out of cabs with on the Upper East Side. It's not that something like handbags and money are something that Stacy particularly cares about, but it does look nice.
Stacy? I want you to take this bag to this address.
He lays the bag flat on the desk and pulls a business card from his jacket pocket. He slides the card and the briefcase across the table to her.
Okay, I guess, she says.
She looks at the address. She feels the high-quality leather, but it feels light and empty. Stacy wonders what's so important about it. And he says,
Stacy, once finished, you can take the rest of the day off.
She gets up to leave. Thanks, she says. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Oh, and Stacy, don't look in the bag.
She turns and closes the door behind her. Part 2, the subway.
There is an Uptown Express 3 train to Harlem 148th Street. Approaching the station, please stand away from the platform edge.
Stacy had a slight incident with the police. She left her wallet at a bar downtown and subsequently attempted to avoid paying for a subway ride. Stacy didn't notice the two undercover officers leaning against the wall on the other side of the turnstile. Even more noticeable was a kid in baggy pants and sweatshirt facing the wall with his hands cuffed behind his back, standing in the space between the two undercovers. She stumbled over the metal arms of the turnstile. Halfway over, a voice said,
You've got to be the dumbest.
Halfway over, a voice said,
You've got to be the dumbest.
The officer was young and had full sleeve tattoos on his arms. He had a big pair of headphones around his neck, blasting hip hop.
Come on.
Walking towards Stacy, handcuffs jingling on his belt.
Can I see your ID?
Well, no, she said.
Do you have ID?
I lost my wallet with my Metro card and money, and this is why I was hopping the gate. And I have to work in the morning, and another ID at home, and he started to unclip the handcuffs as she trailed off.
You know it's the law, you have to carry identification. Face the law.
Yes, sir. I really need to get home. The officer with the big headphones blaring stood behind her and locked up the cuffs. Stacy thought the song was obnoxious, but it did the job of making her uncomfortable. He patted her down.
I'll tell you what. If you have a parent or family member identify you over the phone, we can let you go. This guy over here has got his hands full.
They nodded over to the kid standing facing the wall who hadn't moved an inch. An express train went by, followed by a cloud of wet air from deep inside a cave-like train line. Stacy held her breath. She turned around and put her back against the slimy concrete wall of the subway station and faced the edge of the platform. She hadn't spoken to her mom in almost 2 years at this point. Her parents got divorced about 4 years ago. Stacy couldn't forgive her mom for getting remarried to an alcoholic registered sex offender. He had money though. At least her mom was happy, Stacy thought. Her dad was probably off the grid on some tropical island with his new fiance. He would probably let her get arrested to learn some deep life lesson anyway. The only person Stacy could think of to call was her boss, Andrew Wright. Okay, you can call my dad, but I don't have a cell phone, so I will tell you the number. Stacy knew her boss's direct office number by heart. He always kept odd hours, so she thought he would be in even though it was past midnight. The officer wrote down Stacy's full name, Stacy Wright, and the phone number.
I'll be back, he said. I'll be back,
he said. He walked up the stairs out of the subway station to the street for better cell phone reception. The other officer without the headphones stayed on the platform with the two detainees. He was about 35 and wore running shoes, jeans, and a polo shirt. He stood facing the turnstile, looking back at them every minute or so with sunken eyes. About 5 minutes later, the other officer returned. He walked over to Stacy and took off her cuffs. You are stupid. But you're lucky. Stupid and lucky, Stacy. Go walk down to the next entrance and get out of here. The officers and the handcuffed kid assumed their original positions, and Stacy ran off up the stairs. She hopped the next turnstile and got to her Washington Heights apartment about an hour later. When she asked her boss about it the next day, he laughed his strange, manic laugh. He just said,
I was young once too.
3 years later, Stacy stands on the subway platform at Astor Place, holding the briefcase in front of her with both hands. She wonders if that encounter with the police affected Andrew's opinion of her. She certainly trusts him after that. The subway station is bustling. It's noon on a Wednesday. The sound of children yelling and business people groaning about their meaningless days create a general dysphoria for her. She begins feeling less invested in her mission. She owes Andy. The train pulls up and Stacy manages to find an open seat between a tall man in a fur coat and a man with his elbows on his knees. He's wearing dirty jeans and
a plumber's crack.
The tall man gets up at the next stop and some of the fur off the long sleeve of his coat catches a buckle on the briefcase. Tugging. Stacy overreacts, yanks it back, causing a puff of fur to fill the immediate area. The man makes an ugly face and takes a few large strides between the other passengers
and off the train.
A few people sneeze as he walks by, including a man on the other side of Stacy.
What a dick,
he says. Stacy giggles. He looks over.
Hey, what's so special about the bag, anyway?
Nothing. My grandma gave it to me when I was a kid, Stacy says.
It looks pretty new.
He leans over to look at the bag. Yeah, I never took it out before, so fuck off anyway.
She says,
mocking the guy. She puts the bag on her other side. He looks around the subway car before standing to hold a rail on the ceiling. Stacy looks at
the address.
It's all the way in Harlem.
That's not so bad.
She can take the crosstown bus to the Heights when she's done. She's already on a 6 train, so she can just stay on until Harlem. A lot of people get off at Grand Central Station.
Four stops to go.
Stacy taps her feet. What if there's drugs inside?
She says.
Or money. It's too light to be a substantial amount, though. Stacy taps her feet. Another train passes on a parallel track, going slightly faster. It feels for a moment like Stacy's train stops or even starts moving backwards.
3 stops left.
Some hipster-looking white kids with ripped jeans and scuffed Converse get on the train. They must go to Hunter College, probably heading up to the Upper East Side to their rich parents' brownstone apartments with elevators and observatories. The kind of people that Stacy might sell a coffin to, art dealers and Wall Street executives. Stacy wants to look natural, like she really owns a bag like this briefcase. She dropped out of community college after 2 years. She still had 3 semesters left
to get an associate's degree.
That's when she got her job at Cooper's. She's 25 now, with hardly anything to show for it. A businesswoman with her own briefcase, got on at the last stop too. Stacy looks at her bag and it seems to breathe in its own shadow. The train shakes on the tracks. The businesswoman opens her briefcase and pulls out a notebook. She starts scratching words into it with a fine-tipped pen. Stacy can hear every stroke. Stacy doesn't notice anyone else. Her vision spirals into focus on the pen and the paper. She badly wants to know
what's in the bag
on her own lap. When they near the next stop, the woman packs up and prepares to get off. The college kids stand up and get ready to get off too. One of them with a red beanie hat swings around the pole in the middle of the train and almost falls. He instead stumbles halfway towards Stacy. He looks at her, but she doesn't look back.
Hey, what's in the briefcase?
Stacy doesn't respond. The train stops and he gets off with his friend. Stacy doesn't understand why everyone is interested in the bag. For a moment, she thinks her own interest in it may be affecting other people's judgment.
That's crazy.
Two stops left.
A man gets on the train. There are three passengers who stayed since Stacy got on at Grand Central. One is a mid-aged Hispanic woman, about 5'2", with dark red lipstick, tight black dress, and a rosary around her neck. The others are two men sitting together at the far corner of the train car from her. One has a big bush of red hair on his head. Pretty big arms. He's wearing a tank top, cargo shorts, and sandals with plaid socks pulled halfway up to his knee. The other is a wiry guy, a blazer, skinny jeans, and flat-soled dress shoes. His hair is slicked down flat against his head. The man who just got on is standing in the middle of the train car. He straightens his greasy
olive-colored trench coat
with a single wipe down from the front of his forearm.
The coat covers everything down to the floor.
He begins muttering something to himself. The trembling of the train car starts him crouching down to maintain balance. Rather than hold onto one of the straps of the ceiling, the man lays vertical on the subway floor. Everyone in the car watches him. These type of things are normal in New York City.
Crazy people are everywhere.
And generally, there's no real danger. So, as is typical, Stacy ignores him. The Spanish woman clutches her purse in one hand and the rosary in the other. The two men continue making plans for their vegan co-op in Brooklyn.
The train nears the next stop.
Staying far away from the man in the trench coat, the Spanish woman prepares to get off. Glancing around the car, he seems skittish and reactive. When the train stops at the next platform, a woman gets off muttering something rhythmic in Spanish. Stacy sees her exhale as though she's been drowning the whole train ride. Stacy notices that a lot of people got off with the other train cars.
Both cars on either side of hers are empty.
One more stop. As they pull away, Stacy sees a sign on one of the posts of the platform reading, Uptown Harlem, 125th Station, closed. Shit, she thinks. That's why so many people are getting off. Shit.
If you see something suspicious in the station or on the train, tell a police officer or an MTA employee. Thanks for riding with us.
The man in the trench coat is still on the floor, groaning as he works his way into a seat and slumps over. Stacy notices that his feet are bare and covered in dirt and scabs. She tries not to look, but sometimes the awful
is intriguing.
Stacy imagines his backstory.
He's a railway worker who moved to the city searching for his wife or long-lost brother or something.
A freak accident trapped him deep in the caverns of the subway lines. After years of feeding on rats and drinking runoff water from unreachable manholes and subway grates, he found a commune of homeless men and women living in the subway system. Years of breathing the stale air and
coughing up hairballs from rats
had stripped him of his voice. He realized that
he was no longer fit for society, and he quickly
turned to drug abuse. He wanders the subway line searching for used needles and drug dealers.
He'll shoot up whatever he can get his hands on.
But his story is probably much more tragic than that. Stacy feels bad for using him as entertainment. Still. She looks over at him.
He stands to face her.
His blank eyes look dead. After swaying a few times, the momentum of the train starts pulling him towards her in a stumbling freefall. His nose is dripping, and Stacy thinks he's bleeding from his mouth. She slips out of her seat before he trips into her. Two men from the other end of the train run up and get in front of Stacy, pushing her back. They've been keeping an eye on the man. My bag, Stacy yells. The red-headed man tries to grab the trench coat, but it slips right off the other man.
Feeling a naked body covered in dirt and blisters.
The redhead gags audibly.
Veins on the naked man's arms are scarred and infected.
He stands and grabs the briefcase, swinging it around his head like a lasso. The metal edge of the bag catches the redhead on the temple and knocks him to the floor. A puddle of blood forms around him, and the naked madman adds urine to it in short spurts. The train makes a hard turn. The man with the flat-soled dress shoes
slips on the wet floor, landing on the trench coat.
When he stands, a huge, dirty syringe is stuck in his shoulder. Pulls out the needle. In an attempt to stab the naked man, he slips again and falls.
If only he had worn sneakers.
Get up.
The naked man mounts his opponent, smearing blood and pus all over the opponent's blazer. He takes a large bite in the cheek of the man, whose slick back hair is now unkempt and dripping with blood. Dripping with the blood of his unconscious companion. This results in a feminine scream.
Headbutt.
Making contact,
the naked man's nose
bursts open, pouring blood. The puddle of blood on the floor is growing. Stacy runs forward to grab the briefcase,
stepping as lightly as possible so as not to splash her new shoes.
She runs back to the far end of the car. With her eyes on the two men,
Stacy wonders if she should help.
Wrong day to ride the subway, she says to herself. Stacy opens the door to the next car and climbs out between the two sections of the train. The hinge quakes back and forth. She secures the first door, carefully opening the door to the next train as she slips in and watches
as it is struggling through the window.
The man in the blazer is flailing from underneath the naked, sore-covered man.
His legs are kicking violently.
Unable to get any traction on the floor, the naked man takes a final bloody bite at his cardioid artery. The blood shoots into the air, covering all the three men on the floor. The naked man begins to writhe around in it, blood pouring from his flesh-filled mouth and busted nose. He looks around and realizes he's alone. He crawls towards the giant needle that was dropped earlier and cradles. He fills it with some of the blood from the floor and then squirts the liquid into his mouth. He does this a few times and then just lies on the floor,
shaking.
The train passes Harlem 125th. One more stop.
You will stand Uptown Express 3, train 2, Harlem 148th Street. Approaching the station, please stand and wait for the platform edge.
Get up.
Pissed that she didn't see the sign at Grand Central for the service change, she scans the subway car. The man in the trench coat is asleep across a row of seats. The two guys at the other end of the car aren't talking anymore. She looks out the window across from her seat, mesmerized by the support beams zipping past. The train is hidden under the Harlem River, and Stacy wonders if there's ever been a bad leak that flooded the subway. There must be tons of water pressure above them. She had a dream once that she could breathe underwater. She went too deep and the pressure from the ocean crushed her into a speck of her original self. It was an almost spiritual experience for her. She was turned into a singularity and in turn was given what she felt as a deeper understanding of the nature of reality. Stacy did briefly feel one with the universe. She was mainly scared of the ocean. It's weird, Stacy thinks, that she could sense such a feeling of oneness, but still care so little about everything in her life. But she does care about the mission she's on. She really cares. She is not sure why she doesn't just look in the bag, but she desperately wants to hang on to the sense of importance, however insignificant. The train lets out a high-pitched squeal as it begins slowing down. It pulls into the station and the doors open. The two men are already standing and walk off when the doors open. Stacy picks up the briefcase and walks past the man in the trench coat.
Just to get one more look at him.
They had a pretty crazy ride together after all. On the subway platform, Stacy watches the train pull away. A few people who had gotten off walk by her on their way to the exit. She overhears a young girl mention something about the briefcase to her mother, who shushes her, and they scurry along. Stacy walks out of the station, across the street to the Manhattan-bound platform. Since she missed her stop, she has to exit completely, pay to get back in, unless there's a nice attendant on duty who might let her. Stacy walks up the stairs and across the street, down the stairs on the other side. She checks to see if there's an attendant. There is not. Stacy looks around, she peeks over the turnstile, looks behind her to the stairs. Putting the strap of the briefcase over her shoulder, she puts her arms on either side of the metal gate and hoists herself over the turnstile. She looks around again. Stacy jumps when she sees a man leaning to the wall to her right, looking at her with his arms crossed. Her heart sinks, but he just laughs a little. She walks by. When the train pulls in, Stacy ducks her head to keep the wind from blowing in her face.
It's something she's done since she was a kid.
Visiting the city with her mom, she gets into the empty car. Next stop, Harlem, 125th Street.
Harlem, 125th Street.
It's about 1:30. It hasn't taken too long to get all the way up to Harlem, but Stacy is ready to get whatever this mission is over with.
Over.
She is starting to get tired and realize she hasn't eaten yet today. When Andy called her into his office, she would normally have been about to take a lunch break.
She was up late last night, too.
A guy at the bar she went to was offering a bunch of people some cocaine.
Stacy did a couple lines.
It had been a while since she had done anything other than drink, so she thought it couldn't hurt.
She couldn't sleep till about 4,
and she felt a little sick in the morning. This adventure is making the day a little better. The train arrives at the Harlem station. Stacy follows a group of people through the exit door, making an alarm go off when it opened. She isn't sure what the purpose is if people just walk through it anyway. It's easier than squeezing 20 people through the narrow turnstiles, though. She walks up the stairs in rhythm with the other passengers up into the busy street. This part of town looks like a strip mall or a carnival to Stacy.
Most of the city does.
New York City is just a novelty now. Nothing like it used to be with the emerging art scenes and clubs that characterized the 80s. There's no place like it, though, Stacy thinks. It's an empty shell, but so crowded with people looking for that same sense of importance,
greatness,
that it used to contain. Stacy decides not to wait for the bus. Walking west from the subway station, she is surrounded by fast food chains and endless product placement. There are huge clothing emporiums with sneakers in the windows and electronic shops with new and used signs above them. A group of tall cross-dressers walk past her and eye the briefcase with pursed lips
and feminine swagger.
They can walk much better in heels than she can. The briefcase is strapped over her shoulder and tucked under her arm. The street is crowded, so Stacy is making tight movements between people, staying close to the building on her right and looking at the street addresses. She passes a Wendy's with a large woman with two kids close behind, and a baby strapped to her chest swings open the door in front of Stacy. She passes a Wendy's. And a large woman with two kids close behind and a baby strapped to her chest swings the door open in front of Stacy.
The door says 79.
The door says 79th, East 125th.
A few more blocks.
Crossing Madison Avenue, Stacy can see the edge of Marcus Garvey Park on the next block down. That's where the Charlie Parker Jazz Festival is held in the summer. One year, Stacy went with her best friend Jay. They went across the street to a restaurant left without paying. They just went so Jay could get high in the bathroom. Stacy forgot her purse in the restaurant and ran back to get it. No one noticed. They don't talk much anymore,
other than cryptic emails a couple times a year.
Jay got sober and moved to Israel to write for a paper. She is an amazing writer. Stacy approaches 5th Avenue. 1 East 125th Street is coming up.
That's the address on the paper.
She can see a colorful sign. She stands to face it, and people part ways around her as they pass. The sign says, Carla's Cuban Kitchen, with a grand opening sign above it.
Well.
Here it goes,
she says to herself.
The windows are tinted, and she can't see inside. Opening a heavy wooden door just enough to slide in, She enters a dimly lit restaurant. It smells great, with spices and
soft flamenco music playing on the radio.
Stacy's stomach makes a long groan. Welcome! You must be Stacy. Andrew said you were very beautiful.
Says the hostess.
She is about 30, with thick, long black hair. She picks up a note from the table and reaches it out to Stacy. It's folded once and says,
Stacy on the outside.
It's written in the same style as the address she's been holding all morning. Stacy laughs when she reads it. Stacy, thank you so much for your effort. I trust you haven't opened the bag yet. I left another note that would have sent you back to your desk as punishment. I hope you came up with all sorts of crazy scenarios today about the nature of the mission I sent you on. The truth is, there is nothing too special about the bag except what it represents. I think your birthday's coming up soon. I just opened Carla's off 125th Street, and I remember that you like ethnic food. Have a free meal on me, and please, keep the bag as a sign of my appreciation for an unrivaled contribution to this company. Enjoy the rest of your day off. Best regards, your boss, Andy Wright.